East and his horses. I can see them well enough. Matthew made a sound like a throat clearing.
At first, the royals were excluded. Alone in a kingdom without man or beast. But then a godmother came and allowed the young prince to see and hear us, here in the bounds of his own castle. She even gave him back his favourite mounts.
He spoke as if the godmother had been granting the prince a favour, yet his beastly shape suggested otherwise. Or had that been part of the original curse, and she had been unable to lift it for some reason? Clearly there was far more to this story than the servants were willing to reveal. What were they hiding? And who did they seek to protect with their silence? And what of King Nicholas and Queen Ruby? Are they at the palace in the capital? Why have they not sought assistance from the other kingdoms?
No, young princess.
Matthew's voice sounded heavy and weary.
Their majesties are no longer with us.
I frowned at his cryptic choice of words, spooning food into my mouth to give me a chance to think. So the king and queen were dead, and no one wanted to tell me how, or why the kingdom had been cursed. What would they tell me, then? Why did the beast... A rustle sounded at my choice of name, but I ignored it. Why did he call the Princess Tawny? Why did he seek a betrothal when he cannot even speak?
You'll have to ask the young prince that for yourself, Princess Sophia.
Princess Sophie, I said without thinking. No one calls me Sophia. I took another bite. A sudden roar, resounding through both my mind and my ears, made me wince and drop food into my lap.
What is going on here?
The beast's anger was far more intimidating now that I could hear him in my mind as well. I wiped up the spilled food before I looked up at him, giving myself a chance to regain my composure. Several of the servants were attempting to babble explanations, and I didn't try to separate out their words, although I did keep my mind receptive, curious to hear the beast speak again.
I gave clear commands that no evening meal was to be served except in the dining hall.
His voice vibrated with the same power and authority that he wore so easily on his misshapen body. It was even deeper than I had imagined, as if a growl lurked behind every word. The servants fell silent, while I looked at him as calmly as I could manage and took another large bite. His eyes narrowed, and his hand trembled slightly.
"Answer me!"
Once again it was Matthew who took the lead.
"Aye, that you did, young master."
He spoke with the same measured tones he had done before the beast's arrival.
"But the young princess ordered different, and who are we to disobey royalty?"
The beast curled his hand into a fist.
"It is my orders that will be obeyed in this castle. Do you hear me?"
He took two long strides forward and swept his fist across the table, catapulting my plate against the far wall. I flinched, and he fell back half a step, a strange expression crossing his face.
"Don't you be forgetting that's your betrothed there, young master," said Matthew,
and I admired his courage. I was still trying to calm my pounding heart. The beast whirled around to glare at where I presumed Matthew to be sitting.
"Not by my choice, as I need not remind you."
His words came out low and dangerous.
"I allow you too much license, stable master."
I shot to my feet. It was Matthew who had at least begun to answer my questions, and now he had stood up to the beast for me. I could not allow him to be threatened in such a way. The beast swiveled to stare at me, and I met his eyes. "Then I will now remind you that I am your betrothed, and a princess of Arcadia. It is time for your imperious orders to cease, and if you make any further attempts to prevent me from eating, you will not like the consequences, I assure you." His eyes widened as he realized I could hear and understand him. I held his gaze, my own icy, for just a moment longer, and then swept from the room. As I hurried back toward my bedchamber, I congratulated myself on my exit. Seeing him silenced by shock had been just as satisfying as I had hoped. But before I reached the room, a heavy hand on my shoulder swung me around. I gasped to find myself confronting the hulking beast. I hadn't even heard his approach.
"So, you can hear me now, Sophie."
I flinched at the sound of my name without my title. It felt strangely intimate hearing his voice say it into my mind, here all alone in this dim corridor. I swallowed, trying to instill some confidence into my voice before I spoke. I meant what I said. No more orders.
"A request, then."
The soft whisper still seemed to hold the hint of a growl.
"We have much to speak of."
I bit my lip, wanting to refuse but knowing he was right. I couldn't let my pride reject his request when I needed information he possessed. I inclined my head. "Very well, then. I will join you in the dining hall tomorrow evening." His hand, still holding me close, didn't loosen, and his eyes searched my face. Did I imagine the barest hint of admiration in his gaze? I had expected anger at my defiance. He lowered his face closer to mine, and somehow I did not pull away. Instead, as his mental voice dropped even quieter, I instinctively swayed toward him, straining to hear with my physical ears.
"Will you marry me in the morning, Sophie?"
I started violently, unprepared for his repeated request. He dropped his hand and I stepped quickly back. For a moment I was tempted to flee, but I stopped myself. "I will not agree to a wedding date until my twin is here at my side." He cocked his head slightly to one side, a curious look passing over his face. Then a dark cloud seemed to settle over him.
"It is not safe for anyone to travel here. The way is barred."
"Then we shall have to wait for the curse to be lifted."
"Impossible."
He stepped toward me and then quickly away again.
"Remember, Sophie, that you won the tourney. You are bound by the ancient laws. Unless you wish to see this darkness cover your own lands as well."
I trembled at the image his words conjured.
"You will marry me, Princess Sophia of Arcadia. You must."
With that dark promise, or threat, he turned and stalked away into the blackness of the corridor. I stood there for a full minute before stumbling the rest of the way into my room. I thought I was alone, but issued a command for any servants to leave, just in case. As I blindly prepared for bed, my mind tumbled around and around in circles. The beast had indicated to Matthew that he had not chosen the betrothal, that he did not want it, and yet he kept pushing for the wedding. I could make no sense of it. I needed more information. It wasn't until I lay in bed in the darkness that I thought of his younger sister, Princess Adelaide. No one had spoken of her fate, left alone in a kingdom with only her brother, and now gone without trace. I pulled the covers over my head and closed my mind. If any servants entered my room, I preferred inaudible whispers to any further words. Chapter 9. For the first time I had remembered to close my curtains, so I slept late the next morning. When I woke, the room looked exactly as I had left it the night before. Obviously, someone had heard my demand to be left alone and had taken me seriously. I sat up in bed and hugged my knees. While I was grateful to see they had respected my order, I couldn't help feeling a tingle of discomfort to know there had previously been invisible people in my bedchamber. I slid out of bed, wrapped myself in a robe I found draped over the back of a chair, and padded to the door. Leaning out into the corridor, I opened my mind to hear the servants. Silence. Another difference between listening to the servants and to Lily. Apparently, distance made a difference. In truth, I felt grateful. I couldn't imagine having to sort through the conversations of everyone in the castle at once. Looking around the room, I found a bell tucked away on a high shelf. Leaning out into the corridor, I rang it for several seconds. I then left the door open and retreated into the room to wait. I had no way to hear the small incidental noises of the servant, such as the sound of footsteps, so for a while I was straining my mind to nothing but silence. When a voice finally did sound, I jumped.
"Your Highness?"
A girl, possibly around my own age.
Did you ring?
Yes, I did.
Thank you for coming. Of course.
What's your name? Admittedly, I didn't know the names of every servant back at home in our palace in Arcadia, but without the ability to see any of the Palinarans, I found myself looking for something to attach to them. The girl didn't respond at first. Had I surprised her with the request?
"It's Lottie, Your Highness."
"It's a pleasure to meet you, Lottie. You sound a little nervous. Is anything wrong?" I hoped the beast hadn't been rampaging around the castle while I slept, punishing the servants for feeding me.
"Oh, no, Your Highness. I just never spoken to royalty before. I'm only a chambermaid. But everyone in the castle has heard about how you can hear us after all, and there is no one else around. And I thought..."
"Yes, indeed. You've quite saved me." I smiled, trying to put her at ease. "It's a little hard to find anyone when everyone is invisible."
"It must be very strange."
She sounded fascinated.
"I can't imagine such a thing."
"It is a little odd, yes," I said, wryly noting my instinct toward understatement. "But I'm slowly getting used to it." I paused, considering.
"You said you've never spoken to royalty before. I understand this is the beast's own castle." "It is Prince Dominic's castle, yes."
Her slow words clearly communicated her unease at my manner of referring to the castle's master. I couldn't help but smile a little, although it was probably childish of me. Every time I called him the beast, it felt like a small defiance.
"Do none of his family or other nobility live here with him? What about before the curse?" "Oh, no, Princess Sophie. Prince Dominic rarely invites others here. Even Princess Adelaide hasn't been here for over 6 years.
"Princess Adelaide?" I jumped on her mention of the beast's younger sister. "Do you know where she is now?"
I couldn't say, Your Highness."
I sighed. What did that mean? That she didn't know? That something was preventing her from saying? Or that she had been instructed not to give me any information on the curse and the missing royals? I changed direction, not wanting to discomfort her.
"So there are no invisible members of court wandering around? It's just the beast and the staff?" "We are isolated here at the Eyre's Castle, and Prince Dominic doesn't like for any of us to leave the protection of the grounds. Wastelands have sprung up across the kingdom, and the animals which roam it keep us in as well as others out. Rumour says that some of the court wanted to brave the danger and attempt to seek help from the other kingdoms. But Prince Dominic warned them not to challenge the boundaries put in place by the ancient laws, lest we brought more darkness on ourselves. Court has disbanded, and the nobility have all returned to their own lands, to protect their people as well as they might."
I must have looked concerned, because she rushed to reassure me.
"Don't worry, we are safe here, Your Highness. The Godmother has placed a special boundary around the castle grounds."
Another mention of how this Godmother had helped the beast. Only it seemed a strange kind of helping to me. If only I knew the whole story. I chewed a strand of hair thoughtfully. She had already been more communicative than most of the staff in the kitchen, and I suspected I was more likely to convince her to confide in me than I was a more senior staff member. I made a sudden decision.
"Are you one of the maids who has been cleaning my chamber, Lottie?" "Yes, Princess Sophie. Is it not to your liking?"
"No, no, everything has been lovely." I paused, then leaned forward.
"Lottie, in truth, it is a little unnerving to me to think of having someone in my bedchamber who I cannot see. I would like to requisition you for a special role.
Me, Your Highness? Are you sure?
Yes, of course. It will not be so very different from your present role, although I hope you will be willing to assist me with dressing and such things.
Me? A lady's maid?
She sounded more astonished than displeased, so I continued. Well, I will need the room cleaned as well. What I would like, Lottie, is if you would become my personal maid, and I will give orders that no other servants are to enter my chamber at any time. I considered. And you must promise me that you will inform me whenever you enter or exit the room while I am present. I would like to always know if you are here or not. Can you do that?
Certainly, Your Highness.
She sounded a little breathless.
It would be an honour.
I smiled. Lottie might not have experience as a lady's maid, but I already preferred her to whoever had attempted to dress me up for the beast earlier. Hopefully I would be able to ease her out of some of her deference. I was pretty sure I had heard my title more times in our few minutes of conversation than in the whole of the last week. It was a little exhausting. A very different sort of personality sprang into my mind, and a grin spread across my face. I wouldn't wish you to be exhausted, and of course you must have the chance to have a break from guarding my room. I will request a second maid. I met one yesterday, in fact. Tara, I believe her name was.
Tara? The serving maid?
Apparently I had shocked her enough to drop my title. I tried to suppress my earlier grin, but didn't quite succeed. She seemed like a lovely girl, I said gravely.
I suppose so, Your Highness.
Her disapproval was patent, but I ignored it. I haven't actually met the steward or housekeeper yet, so could you ask them to attend me here as soon as possible? I will convey my new orders regarding my chamber and request yours and Tara's services.
Certainly, Princess Sophie. I'm certain they will come immediately.
Thank you. There was a moment of silence, and then...
I am exiting the room, Princess Sophie.
Thank you, Lottie. It seemed my instinct had been right. Lottie would be a diligent personal maid. A pang of hunger made me hurry to my feet and rush to the now-closed door. Flinging it open, I called into the apparently empty corridor. And please have a meal sent up as soon as possible.
Certainly, Your Highness.
Lottie sounded more distant than she had before. I sighed with relief at having caught her before she travelled out of earshot. I hadn't gotten to finish my meal the night before. In fact, far too many of my meals since I had arrived had been missed or interrupted. I thought uneasily of the meal I had promised to eat with the beast that night. Hopefully we would be able to keep our conflict in check long enough for me to eat my fill. But perhaps I should order some afternoon refreshments from Lottie or Tara, just in case. The steward and housekeeper were respectful and obliging. If they found my requests odd or inconvenient, they hid it well. Not surprising, perhaps, if they were used to the beast's fits and tempers. I brooded darkly on his overweening sense of authority as I made my way down to the dining hall around sunset. I found it insufferable enough, and I was free to defy it. I couldn't imagine being one of his servants, forced to accept his ill temper without demur. The table had been laid out in the same manner as previously, the beast once again rising to his feet at my entrance. He seemed to have taken a little more care in his clothing, but the fine clothes still looked odd and out of place on his strangely bulky frame. I carefully avoided meeting his eyes, unwilling to deal with whatever intense emotion might be lurking there. I took my place with a nodded greeting and waited politely for him to be reseated before beginning to eat. For the first couple of minutes neither of us spoke, and I was reminded of our first meal together. Except that this time I strained my mind beneath my calm exterior, forcing myself into a receptive state at odds with the tension I felt at his presence. My only purpose for being here was to gain information, and I didn't want to miss anything he might say.
"I hear you are already ordering my servants as you see fit," he said at last.
"Do you have a problem with that?"
I asked, finally looking his way.
"Certainly not," he paused, "as it pertains to your own care."
I drew a steadying breath, not wanting to start a conflict so quickly.
"I am striving to make myself at home."
"An admirable goal. Although once we are married, we will unfortunately have to relocate to the capital."
I ignored his reference to our wedding. "You do not like the capital?"
"I prefer my solitude."
I refrained from retorting that I was sure everyone else preferred it that way too, and took the opening he had provided.
"I have heard you disbanded the court. There cannot be many left living in the capital now."
He shrugged, an awkward gesture on his broad shoulders.
"We are unable to trade with the other kingdoms, which means much of our commerce and production has halted, and all of our diplomacy as well, of course. I could not guarantee my ability to feed the people if large numbers remained in the city. Plus, the estates needed their leaders in this uncertain time. Until the curse is released, we are all of us trapped, our kingdom unable to move forward."
I blinked twice. I hadn't expected such a reasonable response. Emboldened, I pressed him further.
"What is the curse, exactly? I couldn't get an answer from your servants."
The beast had turned his gaze to the opposite wall as he spoke, and he made no response to my question. I waited silently. At last he turned his head to look at me, piercing me with his gaze.
"How is it that you can hear me? Can hear the servants?"
For a long moment we both sat frozen, our eyes locked. He was the last person I would ever tell about Lily and my connection, and somehow he knew it. Knew that I had secrets of my own. I ground my teeth together before breaking the stare. I lifted another forkful to my mouth, only to change my mind and put it back down on the plate.
"Why did you call the Princess Tawny?"
I looked up at him, but he had already looked away. Another long silence stretched out, and I sighed. Did he intend to tell me anything?
"I am the heir to Palinar."
He hadn't turned to look at me this time, and I frowned at his profile.
"That is one thing I already know. You haven't answered my question."
He glanced toward me. "Isn't it obvious? I am the heir. I need a royal bride, and I had no other way to find one."
One of my hands tightened around my glass. "And now that I'm here, what do you intend to do next?" He laughed, the sound unexpected and rough, as if from disuse.
"Why, marry my betrothed, of course. I can arrange the ceremony for tomorrow morning, if only you will consent."
"I have said it before, I will say it again. I will not marry you without my sister."
He gave another laugh, but this one lacked even the faintest trace of humour.
"Then we will wait."
"For what?"
"For the curse to be broken. I believe that's what you said last night, is it not?"
I stood to my feet, struggling to keep my voice calm.
"That is all you have to say? You brought me here knowing you were cursed, knowing I would be trapped here like the rest of your kingdom. And now we are merely to sit around, both of us prisoners to this castle."
The beast leaped up, his chair clattering loudly against the stone floor as it fell behind him.
"Not by my choice."
"Well, not a single part of this has been by my choice."
My hands balled into fists, my whole body trembling. The beast and I stood facing each other, so close I could feel the anger radiating from him.
"You have destroyed my life, beast."
He raised his lip, his fangs glistening in the firelight. I took a shaky step backwards, and he growled low as he had after our confrontation in front of the castle. But this time the sound rose in volume until it turned into a roar. I stood my ground, shaking still, but determined not to run this time. Abruptly he fell silent, only to turn and stride from the room. I remained in place until my tremors stilled, staring at the door he had slammed behind him. Had I just won a victory? If so, it felt far less satisfying than I had imagined. Chapter 10. When I pushed open the door to my chamber, my head pounding from the recent tension, a vague whisper stirred my awareness. I rubbed my eyes and forced my mind into a receptive state. "I apologize. Could you please repeat that?"
"We are here, Princess Sophie. Tara and I."
Lottie sounded concerned.
"Thank you for letting me know. Have you had a chance to fill Tara in on my requests?"
"Yes, and I want to thank you so much for asking for me." Tara jumped in to speak for herself. "I never dreamed of such an opportunity, and I want to assure you that you can absolutely rely on me. I will not allow another soul to cross your doorway. I will guard it with my life."
I chuckled, despite my fatigue. "I hope that won't be necessary, but I appreciate the sentiment."
"It will not be necessary, Your Highness."
Did I imagine Lottie's slight stress on my title?
"The staff have all been informed of your orders, and none of them would defy you."
Tara sighed.
"But if they did, we would protect you. We would not, however, wish you to feel unsafe."
Was it possible to hear a glare?
"You need have no fear of the staff here."
A bubble of amusement welled inside me, and I desperately wished I could see their facial expressions. They were as much of an ill fit as I had imagined, and I briefly felt guilty for forcing them together. But the decision had already been made, and I suspected they would make a good team, even if they couldn't see it now.
"You look tired, Princess Sophie."
Tara sounded hesitant, and I suspected she would have liked to substitute the word tired for something stronger. Of course, Lottie wouldn't have commented at all.
"I will admit I have something of an aching head."
I gently massaged my temples before smiling in their direction.
"Your master is not the easiest person to talk to." "Don't tell me he chased you off before you finished your meal again." "Tara!"
Tara ignored Lottie.
"Would you like me to fetch you some food from the kitchens?"
"There is no need. I ate enough."
I sighed.
"He does have a bit of a temper, doesn't he?"
"It's gotten ever so bad since the curse,"
Tara agreed.
"But you're tired," interjected Lottie. "Don't let us keep you up talking. We'll help you undress."
As she spoke, I felt the laces at the back of my dress loosen, although I could not feel her hand. I had to suppress a shiver at the strangeness. I had made her experiment with me earlier, and nothing we tried had allowed either of us to make contact with the other. I could not see her, of course, but she had assured me that she was attempting to place her hand on my arm. And yet each time she got close, her hand seemed to veer away, skimming just above the surface of my skin. I was glad she could still touch my clothes. On the other side of the room, a large jug of water lifted into the air and began pouring water into a basin. Tara's voice sounded from that direction.
"I would love to see you tell him off one day. I can't imagine being brave enough myself."
I snorted, and my laces jerked. I suspected Lottie would soon be losing some illusions about princesses and their elegant ways. "Don't worry, my knees knock together so loudly he can probably hear them." I stepped away from the dress, which now pooled at my feet. Tara giggled, so I decided to push for a little information. "How did he become a beast? He was obviously a normal man once." My dress, which had been floating away from me, paused, and a small splash of water missed the basin and landed on the table.
"Oh, how clumsy of me! I promise I'm not usually so careless."
Tara sounded breathless as the jug floated down to the table and a towel mopped up the spill. Any lingering uncertainty disappeared. They had been told not to speak to me about the curse, which meant I would need to be much less direct in my future attempts, and also that it was time to resume my search of the castle. The next morning I woke to a fresh breakfast laid out next to my bed. No one answered my tentative morning greetings, so it seemed my new maids had already left the room. I ate quickly, eager to return to my explorations. By the time I had finished eating, Lottie had announced her arrival and stood ready to help me dress. I considered asking her to be my guide, but I worried that such a task might make her uncomfortable, especially given she was still adjusting to her new role as my maid. Plus, I wasn't sure that I could take a full day of being called Your Highness every 5 words. So, once again, I found myself wandering alone through the rooms of the castle. I soon found myself in a new section, one that seemed even more expensively decorated than the parts I had already seen. I shook my head. Such a large building to house only one prince. Yet another example of the beast's selfishness. I had managed to turn myself around in circles twice when I heard a small voice.
"What are you doing?"
Gordon spoke from a shadowy back corner. "I'm learning my way around the castle. What are you doing?"
"I'm hiding."
"Hiding from what?"
"From Gilda. She wants me to scrub pots. She says it will be good for me. I don't see how."
"That is certainly a little mysterious." He sounded just the way I had always felt when forced to study mathematics. "You seem very young to be working in the castle." Gordon sighed, as if he had the weight of the world on his shoulders.
"That's what I always say. I'm only 9 years old, after all. One of the grooms has a son, Michael, who's 9 too, and he's always running around outside. But Gilda says that if the prince is housing and feeding me, I must earn my way. She says I need to learn to be grateful."
He sighed again.
"Sometimes it's hard to be grateful, especially when I want a second sticky bun and Gilda says no."
I carefully kept any amusement off my face. "Does Gilda have the care of you? What about your parents?"
"I don't know my parents. Apparently some of the grooms found me out in the stables when I was just a baby. I wish I could have stayed out there."
He sounded dejected. "In the stables? You'd like to live with the horses?"
"With old Matthew. He's a right one."
A more energetic note entered his voice.
"Have you seen the way he handles the horses? There's not a one anywhere in the kingdom he couldn't calm right down. Even the prince has things to learn from old Matthew."
"It's a pity that I am unable to see him then. He sounds like a fine stable master."
"Oh, that's right. I forgot."
He spent a moment pondering my predicament.
"You would think it would be fun to be invisible, but it turns out it doesn't feel any different from usual. Plus, what's the use of it when Gilda can still see me?"
"What use indeed?" I bit my lip. "So you would rather have been a groom than a kitchen boy?"
"Of course! Who wouldn't? But apparently they all felt that a baby needed a female influence, whatever that means. So here I am, stuck with Gilda and all the scullery maids."
I couldn't help feeling sorry for the boy, although he himself seemed much more interested in the horses than his lack of family. And as for the beast, expecting a young child to earn his keep in such a way. I shook my head. It was despicable. Did he truly have no compassion? Sudden inspiration struck me. "Gordon, would you like to leave the kitchens for a while and come to work for me?"
"Like Tara, you mean? I don't think I'd make a very good lady's maid."
It was hard not to laugh at his doubtful tone, but I managed it. "No, I was thinking you could be my page boy."
"Does a page boy have to scrub pots?"
"Not a single one."
"Well, in that case, I suppose I could give it a try. Do you have your own horse? I could look after her for you."
He sounded so eager that I didn't have the heart to tell him that a page boy's usual roles didn't include horse care. "I do indeed. Her name is Chestnut. But for now, I was thinking that you could be my guide around the castle. If you grew up here, you must know it very well."
"Oh, I'm the best. I have to be. to keep finding new hiding places where Gilda can't find me. Did you know I once used the moving cupboard that takes the food between the kitchen and the dining room to hide from her for a whole day? She was watching the door of the kitchen, sure I would come back when I got hungry. But little did she know, I kept using it to sneak back in for food.
He sounded extremely proud of this accomplishment. I paused for a moment, as I imagined how easy a task he would find it to hide from me.
If you're going to be my page boy, Gordon, you must promise you won't hide from me as you do from Gilda.
Oh, no, I would never,
he assured me. I expected to hear a comment about my royal status, but instead, he added,
you're letting me look after your horse. Chestnut, I should say.
I grinned at being put so effectively in my place, which was apparently well behind my mount. Gaining a guide who seemed to have not the least filter on his words seemed well worth any small bruising to my ego. And, in fact, Chestnut was an extraordinary horse who had borne the trip into Palinar admirably. Perhaps Gordon had the right of it. It turned out to be difficult to direct a guide when I couldn't risk telling him my true purpose. Not when the entirety of the staff had shown themselves determined to keep me in the dark. Gordon's easy chatter could work against me as well as for me. Still, at least I no longer kept finding myself back in the same room. Gordon showed me all around this more lavish wing of the castle, except for one set of rooms which he blithely informed me belonged to the prince.
None of us are allowed in there, which means it would make the best hiding place, of course.
His wistful tone made my lips twitch again.
But I daren't. The prince might eat me.
Eat you? I'm sure he would not.
No, you're probably right. But one of the grooms told me.
I put up my hand to stop him. I had enough terrible imaginings about my betrothed running around my head without adding to the mix ridiculous horror stories made up to tease children. No one is going to be eaten. But I dare say it is best if you don't attempt to hide in there regardless. Gordon reluctantly agreed with me, only cheering up again when he remembered that he no longer had any need to hide from scrubbing pots. We had nearly made our way back out of the beast's wing, when we passed a door that looked just like all the others.
Oh, and there's the gallery, of course. I suppose you've already seen that.
I stopped.
The gallery?
You mean a portrait gallery? This door? I pushed it open as soon as I heard his confirmation. As much as I tried not to let them, the beast's eyes, so human in his otherwise terrifying form, haunted me. And I hadn't forgotten the overheard conversation of the scullery maids, who had called him handsome as well as scary in the days before the curse. His own castle should have a portrait of him, surely. The door unexpectedly gave way into a cavernous hall, lined with portraits on every wall. High windows poured light into the space, illuminating the heavy paint and vibrant colours. I ran my eyes down the closest portraits, but could tell from the clothes that they could not be the beast.
Gordon, are you here?
Yes, Princess Sophie.
He sounded like he was already a long way down the hall. I raised my voice slightly.
Is there a portrait here of the current royal family?
Of course. It's that big one.
I suspected he was waving, having once again forgotten that I couldn't see him. I scanned the walls, hoping to spot one significantly bigger than the others, and sure enough, I soon found a painting easily twice the size of the others around it. It hung in the middle of the room, dominating the wall. In the centre of the portrait loomed an older man. He wore the crown of Palinar on his head, and his hand rested against the hilt of his sheathed sword. I fell back a step as I gazed into his motionless visage. There was a hardness and a cruelty in the lines of his face, and the tilt of his eyes that scared me more even than the beast. I took a steadying breath. To the king's left sat his wife, her daughter standing behind her, posed with one hand on her mother's shoulder. The two looked so similar as to be startling. Princess Adelaide merely a younger version of her mother.
Both appeared gentle from their painted expressions, a soft light in their familiar blue eyes. I remembered that 8-year-old Princess Daisy of Trione had reported that Adelaide had always been kind to her when they had met, unlike Prince Dominic. Thinking his true name drew my eyes irresistibly to the other side of the portrait, no longer able to resist the pull of seeing the beast in his old form. The painting could not have been painted long before the curse. Prince Dominic looked at least 17, the age he had been when the other kingdoms lost contact with Palinar. Once again the painter had done a masterful work, the face in front of me looking almost frighteningly lifelike. Somehow the artist had even managed to capture something of the intensity of his gaze. Prince Dominic might have inherited his eyes from his mother, but they burned in him in a way they didn't in her. The young prince stood slightly separate from the others and back a step. His expression looked distant and cold, but his hand on his sword hilt lacked the aggression of his father's stance. Once again I marvelled at the nuance the painter had managed to convey. And I had to admit the scullery maid was right. Prince Dominic had been tall and strong, his face almost too handsome for comfort. The first time I had seen the other princes of these lands was when Lily and I had arrived in Marin and been presented to the court at the opening of the Princess Tourney. Only Dominic had been missing. At the time I had found Daisy's older brother, Prince Teddy, cute. I even remembered using the word handsome at one point. But I knew now I would never even have noticed the others if Prince Dominic had been there too. Even as young as he must have been when he sat for this portrait, he made Teddy look like a boy. I couldn't explain exactly why, but it hurt me to look at him as he used to be, his face so closed and hard.
I overheard someone say that King Nicholas wanted theirs to be the biggest of all the pictures. Did you know that they had 4 horses on the carriage that brought it here from the capital?
How in the kingdoms would I know such a thing? But apparently the question was rhetorical, because he forged ahead.
4 horses, just for a picture. Can you imagine? I'd like to drive 4 horses some day. I don't suppose you brought 4 horses with you? On your carriage, perhaps?
I'm afraid not. I rode. I tried to steer the conversation back to the royals, eager to take advantage of the opportunity to talk to someone who didn't guard their words.
Did you ever meet King Nicholas?
No, the king never comes here. And I was only 3 the last time Queen Ruby and Princess Adelaide visited. Gilda tried to lock me in the kitchen the whole time.
He sounded scornful of such an attempt.
They were here for a week, and on the first day I climbed up to the cooling pies the chef had made for the evening meal. I ate so much I felt sick for days. They let me out after that.
I could easily imagine the havoc a determined 3-year-old could wreak on a busy kitchen, and felt sorry for everyone involved. I wanted to ask him what had happened to the rest of the beast's family, but didn't want to rush into it in case he clammed up after all, and refused to answer any more questions.
Did the prince not get on with his father?
Gordon snorted.
No one got on with old King Nicholas. He was a monster even without a curse. The adults are always sending me out of the room when they talk about it, so I have to listen at the doors. If you weren't a princess, I'd tell you some of the stories. But it doesn't seem right to tell a princess such awful things.
I once again examined King Nicholas, the man who had wanted his own portrait to dominate the gallery. It wasn't at all hard to believe the man in the picture had done despicable things. His wife, on the other hand...
And what of Queen Ruby? What stories have you heard about her?
I don't need stories. I met her myself. He sounded proud. Well, I was only 3, so pretty much a baby. But I remember her, a little. And Princess Adelaide. The princess played with me every day after they let me out of the kitchen. And the queen gave me the biggest red ball you ever saw.
He fell silent, apparently dwelling on the magnificence of this gift.
I would still have it, too, if Michael hadn't borrowed it and lost it. I tried to make him give me his ball, even if it wasn't as nice as mine. But he's a big bully.
He dwelt on the injustice of the situation.
I'm sorry it was lost. If I get the chance, I'll try to find you another ball.
Really? That would cheer up Michael. Make sure it's a red one, though. His is only brown.
I'll do my best. Perhaps I can ask the Queen where she got the original one from.
Ask her?
Gordon easily took my bait.
You can't talk to someone who's been dead for years. Really? Girls?
I could easily picture him shaking his head in scorn. So Queen Ruby was dead. I glanced between her and her terrifying husband. Did that mean King Nicholas was dead also? I felt guilty for hoping so, but I didn't think I could cope with both the beast and his father, at least not if the king was anything like this portrait made him look. A heaviness gripped me. I had suspected before I came that the missing Palinaran king and queen must be dead, but I had still held out some hope. My eyes once again travelled to the prince. Could the beast have had some hand in the deaths of his parents? I wouldn't have even considered the possibility if not for the darkness and misery of the tawny, a reflection of the beast himself, and I had now seen his temper first hand. If he had killed them, would that have been enough to curse his kingdom? It was a chilling possibility, but hard to countenance in the face of his servant's support, and that of a godmother, supposedly. A godmother, despite the fact that the rest of the kingdoms hadn't seen one in generations. But still the seed of doubt lingered. Chapter 11 Gordon suggested we move on, but I couldn't bring myself to leave the captivating portrait. I took several steps back, trying to get far enough to absorb the scope of the whole family at once. It was strange to see such similar features animated in such different ways.
"What are you doing here?"
The now familiar growl sounded so abruptly that I jumped. I put a hand on my racing heart and glared at the beast.
"I'm merely entertaining myself in your portrait gallery. I assume you didn't hang all of these works of art just so you could forbid anyone ever looking at them."
"I didn't hang any of them. And I would burn this one if it were not for—"
When he didn't continue, I frowned. Sure, he had been finally about to say something of interest. I glanced as surreptitiously as possible between the beast himself and this portrait of Prince Dominic. He was recognizable still, especially the eyes. But his current face appeared even more misshapen against the image of what it used to be. Had I made a mistake by searching out his portrait? His previous humanity only highlighting his current beastly state.
"This wing is forbidden to you."
I jumped again at the aggression in his tone after such a long silence.
"Of course I shall not enter your chambers, but what reason can you have for barring me from this hall?"
"I do not need a reason."
Each word was punctuated by the ghost of a growl.
"You do if you wish me to continue to eat with you each night."
I waited while he weighed the two.
What did he have in this wing that he felt such a strong need to bar me from it?
Surely the answers I sought must lie here somewhere. He looked at the portrait, and I couldn't begin to read the storm of emotions that flashed across his face. But then how could it not cause him pain to look on his dead parents and his old self? I wanted to call back my words, to tell him that I would stay away. But I thought of Lily and hardened my heart. He had already caused me great pain, and I could not allow myself to become weak.
"Very well," he said at last. "I will see you tonight, Sophie."
As before, in the corridor, his use of my name shocked me. The sound of it in my mind felt as intimate as a caress. I had to force myself to hold his gaze, and something in his expression told me he knew it. I clenched my teeth as he gave me the shallowest of bows and exited the room.
When would I stop being thrown off balance by his presence?
"Wow!"
I had completely forgotten Gordon.
You stood up to him just as well as old Matthew does.
I understood from our earlier conversation that this was high praise. Thank you, I sighed. Could you show me the way back to my room? If I was to eat with the beast again, then I wanted a chance to rest first, and I would need Tara and Lottie's help with making arrangements for my new page boy. As I ate the first few mouthfuls of my evening meal, I looked around the large, mostly empty dining hall. The far end of it was shrouded in shadows, the servants not having bothered to light all the candles for just the two of us. Only the crackling of the fire and the sound of cutlery clinking provided any noise. When had this become my life? I remembered relaxed and happy meals with my family, who always ate at least the morning meal together. Even boring state meals had been enlivened by Lily's silent commentary. Many a time I had needed to suppress an oddly timed laugh after some humorous comment from my sister. Now I only fought to suppress discomfort, anger, and fear. And I could only imagine the state I would be in at this point if I hadn't learnt the means of communicating with the servants. I continued to chew listlessly, unable to summon up my usual enthusiasm for the delicious food. "How do you do it?" I asked, putting down my fork at last. "How have you borne it, trapped here alone for years?" The beast looked at me, surprise etched across his face. He probably hadn't expected me to initiate conversation after our confrontation in the portrait gallery.
"I am not alone," he said, "not since my godmother made the servants visible to me. And in truth, I have never been alone."
His mental voice dropped almost to a whisper.
"Unlike my sister."
His sister? Curiosity burned, but I knew better than to ask for an explanation. I had barely eaten yet. It was too early in the meal for a conflict. I sighed. I shouldn't have expected empathy from him. The tawny had shown me his implacable and merciless nature with the way it had driven us on through the events, regardless of illness or injury. Plus, he wasn't a prisoner here, as I was. He had chosen to retreat from the world. I took several more bites, the resentment growing. Would it have been so hard for him to apologize, even once? Was he truly without compassion of any sort? "But what of your kingdom? You say it is not safe to travel outside the grounds, yet surely you must have some way to communicate with them."
"My royal carriage is safe, as you saw. I send it to my lords on occasion with letters and missives. And as for the rest of the time, well, they know I watch them. They would not dare step out of line."
That hadn't been exactly what I meant, although I could easily imagine the nobles fearing a royal family led by King Nicholas and now a cursed beast. But my mind caught on his earlier comment. He watched them. From here. "Do you have spies among your own people, then?"
"Spies? No, of course not. How would they communicate with me if I did?"
I flushed at the note of derision in his voice. "How do you watch them then, beast? Locked away in your isolated castle?" The wrinkle of confusion had returned to his brow, as if he were honestly confused by my comments rather than merely contemptuous. When he spoke, his words were slow.
"I brought my family's mirror with me, of course. I would never have left it unattended in the capital."
"Your mirror?" I now felt completely lost, as if we were having two different conversations, each missing the other's point entirely.
"Yes, my family's mirror. It is the oldest and most powerful of the royal mirrors."
I frowned at him, and a strange expression crossed his face.
"Does your family not possess a royal mirror?"
His tone turned thoughtful.
"I know the Marinese Duke does not. Do not tell me you knew nothing of their existence."
"I have never heard of a royal mirror." I hated having to admit my ignorance to such an arrogant person. "I take it you are referring to a magical object of some sort." I had understood magical objects to be extremely rare in these lands,
given the disappearance of the godmothers so long ago. Of course, if the beast's own claims were to be believed, there had been a godmother here not so long ago after all.
The royal mirrors are old beyond counting. They have been passed down from monarch to monarch in each kingdom for many generations. You truly had not heard of them?
No,
I snapped the short word. Then I regret mentioning it.
I ignored him. What does this magical mirror do? Allow you to spy on your people? It seemed a strange object for the godmothers to gift.
It allows the viewer to see and hear events taking place far from them, certainly. But the mirrors also form a network with communication possible between each of them, or all together. It allows the monarchs of all the kingdoms to speak together at will.
Now that sounded like a powerful and useful tool. Why have you not used it to communicate with the rulers of the other kingdoms? You could tell them of the state of affairs in Palinar. Ask for assistance. A soft growl rolled over me, seeming to escape from the beast without his noticing.
Palinar does not need their help.
I rolled my eyes. Don't be ridiculous. You need all the help you can get. A soft sound, almost like a sigh, slipped from the beast's mouth.
I have received no communication since the curse fell, and any attempts to call outwards have reached only darkness.
Ah, that was the truth of it. The curse had cut off even magical communication. I considered his words some more. You can magically spy on anyone you like, even the other rulers. I could see lots of problems with such a situation.
Not everyone. There are limits. The mirror will only show your own people.
He watched my face.
Do not be concerned. There are limits to what the mirror will show.
I tried not to let the relief show on my face. I had already been imagining the feeling of ghostly eyes on me at all times. So you hole yourself up here in your castle and watch your kingdom from afar. The disapproval was obvious in my tone, but I made no attempt to check it.
For now.
He seemed impervious to my criticism. We ate the rest of the meal in silence, my mind still considering all the ramifications of his revelation. When I had finished, I stood to my feet, proud to have made it through an entire meal with him. He stood swiftly as well, stepping over to offer me his arm as if he meant to escort me to the door. I eyed it doubtfully, but could think of no reason to refuse the uncharacteristically polite gesture from my betrothed. Had it been mere days ago that I had resolved never to let him touch me? It seemed an eternity ago. Reluctantly, I placed my hand in the crook of his arm. As we walked slowly to the door, I thought of the prince in the portrait. What if there had been no curse? What if I had come here to be his bride, travelling in a proper royal procession, Lily by my side? I kept my eyes on the ground. With only the feel of his arm beneath my fingers, his muscles hard and strong, it was easy to imagine the tall young man from the painting. Would I have been pleased when I saw his handsome face, or scared by his hard expression? I could no more decide the answer to that question than I could understand my own emotions when his all-too-human eyes pierced me through. When we reached the door, I looked up into his face and couldn't help a start of shock at his beastly features. Whatever I might have thought of that prince, he was long gone. And if I wanted to break this betrothal, then I needed to outwit him, which meant understanding the advantages he possessed. "Will you let me see your magic mirror?" I asked him abruptly. His eyes narrowed.
"The mirror is only for use by members of the royal family. If you wish to see it, you need only consent to our wedding taking place immediately. Will you marry me in the morning, Sophie?"
I flinched back, berating myself for being once again surprised by his apparently inevitable question. "Don't call me that!" I snapped unthinkingly. He raised an eyebrow.
"By your name, you mean?"
I thought you said Sophie was your preference. What would you have me call you instead?"
I flushed at having revealed myself in such a way.